This is episode 283 of Jumble Think.
3 minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Jumble Think, where we interview dreamers, makers, innovators, and influencers about their journey of turning their dreams and ideas into reality. Along the way, we're going to share some tips on how you can turn your own dreams and ideas into reality, too. Our guest on today's show is Zach Slingsby. More about Zach in a moment. Whether you're a new listener or a longtime fan, if you haven't subscribed already, you should do it right now. How do you do it? Well, head on over to your favorite place to listen to podcasts, places like Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and Google Play, and now even Pandora. Search for Jumble Think and click that subscribe button. While you're there, leave us a rating and review and let us and others know what you think of the show. Now let's jump into today's conversation with our guest, Zach Slingsby. Hey there, welcome to Jumble Think. My name is Michael Woodward. I am your host. We have a very fun show lined up for you today. Before we get rolling, we want to thank our friends over at Penji for sponsoring today's show. Penji is your source for unlimited graphic design at a low monthly subscription rate. You can check them out by heading on over to penji.co. As a listener of Jumble Think, they're going to do something really cool for you. When you use the code Jumble, they're going to give you 15% off your first month. So head on over, penji.co, use that code Jumble, and start getting the design you deserve. Today's show was recorded live at Podcast Row, hosted by Stand Up New York on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. You should go check out what they're doing, podcast-row.com. Today's guest is Zachary Slingsby. He is the founder and creative director of Human Factor Media, a New York-based creative production agency that has a simple belief that brands should make videos people actually want to watch. Zach's background is not in digital or in film, but in creative and technical writing. He graduated Fordham University as an English major, got a Master of Fine Arts from the New School, and his work has appeared in multiple publications, including The Brooklyn Rail, Secondhand Stories, Into the Void, Juxtaprose, Glimmer Train, and many others. He recently finished a novel and expects it to be on bookshelves soon. He is the host of a forthcoming web series and podcast, Why Aren't You Famous?, coming out the fall of 2019. Now, Human Factor Media is a collection of literary, comic, and film talents trying to displace digital ads with branded videos of true entertainment value. Their digital team then uses the best modern media strategies to find the right audience at the right time, at the right place. They think the evidence is clear, that society has become exhausted by self-promotional brand strategies and that buckets of money are wasted in that endeavor every minute. They would like to see American commerce give art a chance, and they think that the powers that be will be pleasantly surprised by the market's reaction. So let's go ahead and join our conversation with our guest, Zach Slingsby. We are here with Zach Slingsby. Thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We're sitting here at the Comedy Club at Stand Up New York for Podcast Row. Lots of fun. Love being here. All right, we're going to be talking about video today. We're going to be talking about storytelling today. We're going to be talking about crafting narrative and much, much more. Before we do that, how in the world did you go from being a writer to starting Human Factor Media and what you're doing now?
Sure, yeah. I just saw the sort of the way that it was going with digital and video, and I thought that it was going to be important to. I saw it as a new platform for telling stories.
Yeah.
And I just think that brands are some of the most interesting stories, or certainly the most influential stories, are coming in the form of short digital videos.
Yeah,
and they're omnipresent. You can't afford them.
Yeah,
and literature is super important to me. And I write short stories and various other things. I have MFA, but I think creative people now are business people.
Yeah.
And I think you have to sort of forge your own way a little bit. There's a lot of myths besieging creative people today. And I fell for a lot of those, I think, for a long time. And so the business thing is for me a chance to see straight, have a shot at empowerment, work towards a creative goal that I can control the outcome of.
You move into creating this business, Human Factor Media. What do you guys do?
We make short films for brands, basically.
Like, what does that mean?
It means that a brand will have a certain ad budget, and we'll say instead of just, you know, taking a bunch of pictures of your product and boosting them all over the internet, let's make a story. Let's make a creative video, like a web series or a comedy series or a documentary or create a character or something like that, right? So we're doing that in really various niches right now.
When a company comes in and they say, hey, here's our budget, what's that process like? What do you go through to help them figure out what's the right kind of outlet for them?
Yeah, it depends on who they want to care about what they're saying. Because I think if a brand uses their platform to tell a story, they have a new leverage point with the kinds of people that they want, whose attention they want to get.
Yeah.
If who you're trying to talk to is, you know, 18-year-olds that are, you know, inundated with all kinds of media all day long, you know, you're going to have to create content that's tailored to not only their interests, but their platforms. Mm. And that doesn't mean it can't be challenging or engaging or, you know, insightful or different. You know, it just means that you want to contextualize everything you produce.
I want to talk to you a little bit about narrative today.
Okay.
And how you create the narrative or how businesses need to be thinking about story and narrative in the process of sharing their brand with the world. For you, why is narrative so important? Where did that love for story come from?
I always wanted to be a writer. You know, I just, even just growing up, I would write the scripts of my favorite TV shows, like The Sopranos and Law and Order and stuff.
Yeah.
Just would do that for hours in my room while my friends were out doing normal stuff. It's weird. You have a lot of creative options, but at the same time, you don't have that many. Not if you want to make a great living.
What do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean is, you know, let's say you were going to say you're going to be a writer.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, you're throwing a rock out into this galaxy. You know? I mean, you don't, 90-something% of books sell less than 1,000 copies. Right. The most common print runs like 1,500. You know, if authors are doing well, generally they've created some kind of following on digital platforms. So there's a lot going. It's not like Fitzgerald writing short stories from the Riviera and he'd send it and get the check and everything, you know. And so there's a lot. It's a different creative landscape. And I think a lot of creative people don't act as though it's a different creative landscape. I think they're still trying to make it in the 20s version of it.
Yeah.
And I think that that's why a lot of them are very depressed. And, you know, I've seen that in a lot of my peers.
Yeah.
And I think that there's another route, which is that the emergence of all these digital channels has created a sort of two-sided market that's slowly becoming more realized, which is that artistic type people can be suited to brands in need of attention. You see that merger, I think, happening a lot.
All right. So I want you to go back to that moment where you fell in love with story. Because you said you like writing, and as a kid, you would, you know, sit at home and write all the stories for different mediums and stuff like that. Can you track it down to a spark moment? Like, was there a moment where you're just like, this has got my attention?
I can't. It's just as early as I remember being alive. I memorized the night before Christmas when I was like 2.5. I don't know. I would go to work with like my father in the summers, and I would write stories about all the people I met there, you know? I just don't know. I just have lived that way. I don't know life any other way.
So it's very much in your DNA. Yeah. It's just part of it.
And I write every morning. I don't want it to sound like I'm down on writing or giving up on writing. I write all the time. I just think that there are many ways to attack the problem of having, you know, a narrative bug.
Whether you're a comic or a script writer, you literally have to sit down and contemplate and usually script out what you're saying.
And I mean, narrative has to be important to you and what you do, right? And these things, I mean, story, I would consider, right? That's storytelling is so much how you conceive of it, right?
Massively important. Yeah. We love bringing on guests who are focused on story. It's one of our passions. And, you know, I look at things like The Moth TV, or not Moth
Radio
TV,
Hour.
Moth Radio Hour. And they should do a TV version, but that's a different story. It just captivates me. And it's something that has for a long time. Like, how can we become better at communicating story and narrative? We'll talk about that in the second segment. I want you to tell us how you can spot a good story, because there's a lot of stories told and not all those stories are good stories. And by good, I don't mean like happy-go-lucky stories. I mean like well-crafted.
You work specifically in the digital marketing space with what you're building with the videos and stories, whether it's documentary form, whether it's a short or whatever that is. There are a lot of brands putting out content out there and it just doesn't resonate. It just kind of falls flat. So
most,
yeah.
20-something billion dollars will be wasted in skipped ads in over a five-year period.
Yeah. So how do you create that narrative, that story that captivates people to bring in, like, what makes that good and strong?
Question. I don't know that I am, like, you know, we're building this and it's been great and we've had a lot of early success, but I wouldn't want to pass myself off as an oracle, you know, or anything. But I'll answer your question the best I can. I think good writing, you just can't see through it. You're immersed.
Okay.
You know, you can't, there's no moment of transparency where you think, I know what they want me to feel here.
Yeah.
You know, you're just in it. You're just involved.
Yeah. You're seeing yourself in the story.
Yeah, it's immersive.
Yeah. You've been working in this space now for a little while and you're creating this company to do it. A company comes in, let's say Joe's Laundromat. It says, we want to run ads. Right. And you go, well, there's more of a story here. How do you sit down with the client and actually figure out what they need to tell?
Okay, so Joe's Laundromat is one laundromat of, you know, one per square block in the city, let's say, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, a young business is going to do, we know what they're going to do. They're going to do the same thing. They're going to run, you know, SEO, right? They all have the same tricks. They're going to do whatever. They're maybe going to get a billboard if they can afford it. They're going to run some
Facebook or Google ads.
Some Facebook, Google ads, some name, some display ads, whatever. So the differentiating factor is is the story you can tell. It's the only, all we really have.
Yeah.
And in the decibel level that things have gotten to, where, like I said, the waste of ad dollars is so intense and the skip rate of YouTube pre-roll is 95%.
Wow.
Right? As soon as the 1 second is up, you're angry.
That's why they're not allowing people to skip anymore as much.
So, right. They're pissed and they don't know what, they have to answer to somebody who's saying, I'm paying you, why aren't I getting, anyway. So, so Joe, I would say, you know, what's your human factor? What's your thing? What's your sort of ability to resonate with someone in a way that's going to just change their day a little bit or stand out in a newsfeed? The cynics in the digital business would call it pattern interruption. But I would say that it's about a meme moment or something that is a connection, a resonating connection that you knew it, but you didn't articulate it before, or it's true to your life. And so it stops you and you say, you know, I know someone else that would think that's also true or funny or insightful.
Yeah.
And so you share it and you pass it on. And so to create a moment like that, just changes, you're not bothering any people anymore. It's called interruption marketing, right?
Yeah.
You're not interrupting anymore.
Yeah.
You're not trying to crowbar in your message. You're trying to invite someone into your story.
So let's say Joe's Laundromat's been around for 200 years. Just make up a number.
Okay.
And they've been doing awesome in New York City.
Yeah.
What kind of approach would you take to tell that story?
Well, wide brand recognition is double-edged because everyone knows you, right? And so so that's good and bad. But you mean with respect to involving the historicity of the business and capitalizing on that?
Or
you
maybe or maybe not.
Yeah. I would just say you have legacy, you know. But you can afford at that time and at that age of maturity, that, you know, maturity cycle to really just become, you are the sort of legacy of your business. So let's tell stories with that in mind, you know, let's create a sort of, let's own the history of this whole space, you know, let's talk about the first dry cleaner ever. Let's do it. Let's tell that story. The first day some guy went into a store and was like, I don't know what to do with this. Like, I got it. You go home, come back in a few days.
Yeah.
You know, what is that? That's crazy. I would want to know all about that. So a 10 part series, black and white, 3 minutes each of the people putting that idea together in a funny way, to me would get a lot more people coming in.
Yeah.
You know, look at the novelty value of the bar that, you know, Cheers was based on, or How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like Sonoma.
Yeah.
Right. So that Napa Valley and Sonoma, it was always had its niche appeal.
Yeah.
But it skyrocketed to popularity after Sideways with Paul Giamatti.
Yeah,
you know, the movie. So the movie comes out, and now, like, the novelty value of location and industry and all those things are so, I think, under tapped.
As we wrap this first segment, how do you find purpose in what you do?
Well, I have to bend what I do toward purpose.
Okay.
Because it's easy. Like, even while we had an important meeting a half hour ago, I ran back here to make, and I just, you know, there's always that baseline feeling of, like, you know, is this important? Is this day meaningful? Mm. And I don't know. It's a wonderful question. I'll let you know when I become wiser and more able to answer it.
Well, we will be right back to talk with Zach much, much more about the art of storytelling. And we're just going to continue this conversation. It's going to be a lot of fun. We'll be right back.
Today's show is sponsored by our friends over at Penji. Penji helps startups, agencies, small businesses, and marketing teams achieve more with unlimited graphic design support at one flat monthly rate. Their easy-to-use online platform pairs you with a professional designer and lets you create as many design projects as you want. Think of it as your monthly subscription to top-notch design with no contracts, no hourly billing, just fast, simple, and affordable graphic design for all of your needs. And as a listener of Jumble Think, they're going to give you 15% off your first month when you use the code JUMBLE at penji.co. So head on over, penji.co, use that code JUMBLE, and get 15% off your first month. Now let's jump back into our conversation with today's guest, Zach Slingsby.
We are back with Zach Slingsby. We're going to go deeper into this conversation. We're going to break this down and give you some real practical, real-world solutions here. First off, before we're going, how can people find and connect with you?
Sure. You can find us, Human Factor Media, on Instagram or Facebook. And our website is relaunching in a couple of days. And then we also are launching a video series / podcast. It interviews different people in different creative industries, literary, film, comedy, dance, art, music. It's people who are doing very well in their field, mm-hmm. but they haven't kind of crested yet. Mm. And it's called Why Aren't You Famous?
Mm.
So we've got that coming out in a couple of weeks as well.
That sounds really, really cool.
Yeah.
Very fascinating. So many stories are being told. And we kind of talked a little bit about this in the first segment. We're going to go a little bit deeper here. So many stories are told, but they're not resonating. They're falling on deaf ears. You talked about that interruption and they're just interrupting everyday life. And yet we find those viral moments where something captivates a group of people. Could be a couple thousand, could be a couple million. And yet somehow when the person's creating content, whether it's a business or an individual, they're posting, and they're like 5 likes, 10 likes, no comments. And all of a sudden they hit a moment and just resonates. What can people be doing? What kind of questions can they be asking, and how can they be preparing their content so that they're not going to always hit it out of the park? I mean, even the biggest corporations have content that they just go, we could swear that was going to work and it didn't work. So we're not looking for 100%, but what if they were to be able to just in a month have at least one piece of content that just really resonated with their audience? What are the questions that they need to be asking in that creation project? That creation process, I guess, is a better way to say it, where they're going, whether it's video, whether it's audio, whether it's a photo, whether it's text-based, and they're posting it out there. The medium of how it's delivered could be different depending on social or traditional media, but there's something that magical happens that all of a sudden somebody resonates with it. So what are some questions that people could be asking to actually craft that better narrative?
I would say that they should ask, what's short and true?
Okay.
What's short and true and relevant? A third factor there could be relevant to what I'm trying to do.
Okay.
But I think short and true are time-tested principles on the digital age. Mm. I think that I really believe this, and I know that not everyone agrees here, but some of the best, not all of it, but some of the best performing content on these channels is the modern version of an insight that you would find buried in a Dickens novel 100 years ago. And so you would have, you'd have to work for it. You'd have to go through the chapters and then you'd stop in the middle of a paragraph and he'd have a sentence that very precisely defined some truth about your time. And that's just been extracted. That's been extracted, slapped on a meme and thrown on your note, And so you see that moment when phenomenon, that's purely literary phenomenon.
Okay. So kind of looking at that. So what you're saying is that you cut the fat from it and you just leave what's remaining.
Yeah. Sort of. It's kind of depressing, but it's also interesting, that's what's still what we value.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know that for me, I'm constantly watching the kind of guests that resonate with our audience.
Yeah.
I'm constantly watching for the kind of posts, maybe it's a quote or a fact or a tip or something like that resonates. And I've worked in the tech space for a long time, but it still surprises me on the things that I'm like, I didn't see that really taking off and having legs like it did. You know, we're talking a little bit about the creation process, but what are some things I can be doing to better understand the things that I am doing?
First, I'd say, just as a practical tip, peel off a portion of your creation or production budget for distribution, just because the way these things are rigged now.
So like you promoting.
You got to have something in the tank there. Yeah, just something. Because I believe, not have to be a lot, but I believe you could put Casablanca on YouTube tomorrow. It might just stay undiscovered. Like just so it's the deluge is getting to such an intense place. But more to your point, I don't think you can control the performance of anything. I think it's mysterious, definitely. But I think that you can set optimal conditions.
Yeah.
I think you can set the best conditions for something to spark. And I also would just take a little issue, and you kind of unpacked this already, with the definition of virality, which is, you know, like Seth Godin says, the smallest viable audience.
Yeah.
I really like that. I really like the smallest viable, because it's, you know, 1,000 people. If I get to work and someone on our team is like, this thing hit 1,000 people, I'm like, I spoke to 2 people so far, like today. That's amazing. You know what I mean? Like, that's amazing. So yeah. I get excited about that. And I think if it's the right 1,000 people, which is where a lot of the analytics come in and the digital side of what we do comes in, I think then that's masterful. You just need once a week for your career, and you're probably doing pretty good.
Yeah.
The right message with the right people at the right moment.
Yeah. Well, and I think that that's an interesting thing, because we, in the influence space and in the space of content creation, we're looking for vast seas of people.
Yes.
We want to capture the attention of millions and millions of people. And I think that if you look at traditional television, the same thing's going on there, where they're just going, hey, you know, we have 500, 700 channels of content being created on traditional outlets. And then we've got outlets on Netflix or Amazon or wherever else people listen or watch their shows. And there is an oversaturation of content, which is really, really hard, because there's good content that's not being seen or heard. There is good content that's being overlooked for content that's subpar. And it's really sad. So we hear this all the time in the space, niche down, niche down, niche down. And I get that to an extent. How can people really set realistic goals on the campaigns they're running?
Clear definition of a win up front. But what... Why do you I'm just curious. I haven't really thought through this deeply enough, but why do you lament that there are more creators and smaller audiences? To me, that just spells a lot of opportunity.
I think for me, the thing that I'm saddened by is the quality of content.
Well, that's fair.
And what rises to the top sometimes isn't the quality. Fair. Sometimes it's because of position. You know, you could have a great actor that comes in and launches a podcast, and they have immediate notoriety because they're a celebrity. But the reality is that the content that they're putting out there isn't really relevant or good, but because they have celebrity, people follow it. Now, I can't give a specific example about that, but then you have...
I hear you.
But then you have, on the flip side, some people who are creating killer content. I was talking to someone, James Alcature is a part of this event, and I was talking to some other creators in the video space. And I was saying about, I'm at this event, James Alcature is there, and he's really cool. And they're like, who's that? You know, so
that's the thing. I was going to make that point next.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I had a who's that moment with him, because I was bragging, because I got to talk to him.
Yeah.
And my friend's like, who? And I was like, come on, you know, but growing up, you know, like everybody had, you know, like, what are you going to watch tonight? Either ER, Friends, or NYPD Blue. You know, everybody know. Now, I don't know what I don't even know what they tell me their favorite shows. I've never heard of them.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, but as someone who's, I guess, maybe selfishly, you know, preoccupied with the supply side, I'm not disheartened by the epidemic.
And I think that the problem for me that lies in the cost of production is that you come to a point of oversaturation where you can't get quality content created. So if you have all the networks coming in and they are all of a sudden, instead of being at like a 7.5 metric for a million, they're down at like sub 100,000. And now all of a sudden their medium is no longer sustainable. And so the quality is then going to suffer, or they're going to figure out other ways to fill that content.
Maybe. Yeah, probably. I mean, if you think of the gatekeeper of the network as the quality filter.
Right.
You know, I don't know if that's a given. Maybe. But right. They put a lot of bad stuff out, too.
Well, and you look at it, let's go one step further.
Yeah.
In a delivery method, Netflix. upside down in cash flow.
Right.
They're so in the red.
Right.
They're not doing well financially. And people overlook at it and they go, well, they're, you know, valued at
household name
and, and all this kind of stuff. And they're great. And they're taking my membership and or my subscription fee and everything's good. And they're creating this good content, but they're creating a lot of good content with a deficit. They're not being profitable. So at what point does that medium become no longer viable? And so that for me, I think is where it gets really complicated because you have good contenters that can't rise to the top, content creators that can't rise to the top. You have places that are creating content because that's how they survive and they're not actually being sustainable. I think, in my view, this is going to be the next big tech bubble that bursts and things fall apart. You know, can Disney Plus sustain when there's a Netflix and Apple TV with their new subscription? At some point, it's not sustainable. And so for me, that's the sad place of like so much content. At some point, it's not sustainable to create at the level we are.
At the same time, though, and I don't think I'm as well versed in this as you are, but I'll take a shot. So as at the same time, you're stripping out a whole industry of people taking, you know, massive percentages of all of these deals and leaving that money on the table for just the strictly the creators, the creation and the distribution. So whatever you want to call it, rebar being stripped out. But what do you think? Do you think there's going to be another Mad Men, another Game of Thrones, or is it just done? Are we all just, because if there can be another one of those, to me, that gives me faith that there'll be a cream rises to the top moment.
Well, I think that there are. It's just a matter of...
I mean, in the sense of it being a culture conversation, of everybody's watching the same show on the same night at the same time.
Well, I think that with the saturation level, I think it becomes...
Game of Thrones might have been the last one.
Well, I don't even think Game of Thrones was actually culturally as relevant as people make it out to be.
But it was something where on Twitter... Or whatever you wanted it, whatever snapshot you took, everybody was doing that one thing at the same time.
I talk to a lot of people that I know, none of them watch Game of Thrones.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think that there's a media push to promote it. I think that there are a lot of people to watch it. I think, I'm not like discrediting what's going on there, but I think on the flip side, I think it was actually bloated on actual impact it was having at culture. I know a lot of people that simply just went, I'm not in. I'm checking out. I don't want to be a part of this.
I know people like that too. But I don't think it was a myth that it was a phenomenon. I mean, I think the numbers are that, you know.
But I think the phenomenon wasn't as big as what Friends or a Seinfeld.
No, I think that's, those two were. Yeah.
I mean, you can even go like How I Met Your Mother or those kind of things. I just don't think the market's there. So all of a sudden your cost of entry to being a part of an elite club is significantly lower. I would consider shows like that have hitting a specific niche that had a large enough market that it flourished and did well and it became kind of a pop culture thing. Mm. So I don't think it had a huge audience it comparative to historical TV, but I think it had enough that it was noteworthy now compared to what we're seeing as a whole because of the vast amount of content there.
So you kind of think, just to try to summarize it, you think that we're in this post group watch kind of day moment, and that like the days of like Breaking Bad finale, Sopranos finale, everybody that's gone, and there's so much, and this is probably ultimately a bad thing.
No, I don't think that that's the case. I just think
I'm just
that,
curious. I'm not trying.
I just think that the content that's being created, we're talking back to the beginning about niches and stuff like that. You will have people who are incredibly, incredibly passionate and loyal fans. So you'll have those watch parties. You'll have those things. But it's just not going to be the same thing as like, who wants to be a millionaire?
That's what I think is true, too. Yeah.
And so it's just going to be different.
Yeah.
And that's the thing about sustainability. And so to bring that full circle to what you're doing with Human Factor Media, what can we be doing to better identify our audience so that we can better create content that resonates with them? So maybe our swimming pool that we swim in, it's not an Olympic pool. It's a doughboy pool, or it's a kiddie pool, but that kiddie pool is enough to survive or help us flourish in the space that we operate.
And a lot of that's what I think we're trying to do with the video series that we're making. It's like, why aren't you famous? Is the tongue in cheek way to say it, but it's like, what's your standard of fame now? You know?
Yeah.
So anyway,
I hope it's not Kardashian fame. Yeah. I don't want that.
No, it's you gotta have a nail polish brand and you gotta be naked on social media. No. Okay. I think
I'm never going to win that battle.
I think I think that you could. I mean, most brand managers will tell you right away who their demographic is. If they're right, I don't know, but they'll say right with great confidence who their customer is and how often they buy and where they live and what they drive. But I think that is an evolving conversation. I think you can come at it from the data, you know, from a raw data analytics perspective. You know, the emergence of sensors in the economy and AI in general make it really creepily, possible to micro-target these days, whether there are all kinds of ethical questions surrounding that. And I don't really want to explore them. My mind's not big enough to grapple with them. But, you know, we do a very cursory version of this, you know, just in terms of trying to get in front of people we think will care about what we make.
I think that there's a question that you could answer here.
Yeah.
GDPR's come in over in Europe, and it's changed how we take data and actually apply it to our campaigns and everything like that.
Yeah.
If that were to come to America, which I don't think we're in threat right now, but it changes the marketing game completely on how we target, because we're going to go target blindly to an extent. Because you're not going to be able
to... Look, we're all playing by the same rules, so I'm fine. Like, that's, in some ways, that's great for me. I feel that I have to have this digital component to the business because it's just expected. It's the baseline standard. And so, but I'm fine to play by the same rules as everyone. Look, if the great equalizer, you know, is the quality of your brand presence, that's great news for liberal arts majors.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm fine with that, you know.
Yeah. I want you to take and maybe give us one or two tips of what businesses should be doing right now and shouldn't be doing.
Okay. What they should be doing. I mean, most businesses that I talk with, okay, and you know, we're one team, you know, this is a very manageable sample size, but I think that there's always a little bit of shame about their brand presence already, because I think that they'll say, you know, you have a website, did you see it? And they're a little, you know, we post on Facebook. I don't know if you know. And so they're not thrilled with what they're doing.
Yeah.
And usually it's because any sort of bureaucratic structure has to start playing it safe at some point. Because when enough opinions are in a room, it'll probably trend toward the safest option. And so you're always, there's an impenetrability to the whole business model that I set up. So, you know, as stupid as that might have been. But I think that they should just try to, you know, even if you're not going to hire anybody from the outside, just get some people to sit them down and give you the honest feedback on, can someone even understand what you do from your website? Are they at all, you know, having any feeling about it one way or the other at all? Or is it just a website that you just leave up there? It's like having a storefront on an alleyway and not telling, you know, so it's, I think that I would just say to try to invite some honest therapy from people you trust. And don't do, is that what you, was the second part of that? Don't just give 20% off. Don't just do the tricks and the short-term fear tactics. It's exhausting. We have banner blindness. We're tired of it, and we see through it. And it appeals to just the part of your brain that does not make decisions. It appeals to, I'm going to probably get it backwards. I think that's your neocortex, right? Which is rational and okay. There's an opportunity here, and then that part of your brain is underdeveloped compared to your limbic brain, and your limbic brain feels something, and that's the part that we use to make decisions. It's the emotional center of our being that we use to decide. Okay, you know what? I'm gonna follow this page and have some brand loyalty. I'm gonna go with these guys. You know, it's not an accident that every cooler at the store is a Yeti cooler. You know.
Yeah. We're going to take a break right here. In a moment, we're going to be back for rapid fire questions.
There is a lot going on at JumbleThink, and we don't want you to miss a thing. How can we stay connected? Head on over to jumblethink.com. You can sign up for our newsletter, click on all those links to our social media channels like Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter, and let's do this journey of chasing dreams and ideas together. So head on over, jumblethink.com, and let's connect. Now let's jump into rapid fire questions with today's guest, Zach Slingsby.
Placez votre électrophone à portée de votre main.
Zach, we are back for rapid fire questions. Are you ready?
I think so.
You think so?
We'll find out.
All right. First question. What is one book you think every entrepreneur, every dreamer should read?
Sam Walton, Made in America.
What is one trend you're currently excited about?
The resurgence of brands finding it necessary to tell stories and not try to sell products.
What's one thing you wish you would have known when you first started out?
That no one really cares what I'm doing. And I thought, you know, I thought that everybody was watching, caring, you know, is he going to screw up? And nobody noticed, nobody cares. So if they, you don't realize nobody cares, it's easier to take some crazy shots.
And our final rapid fire question, what is one dream you're still wanting to fulfill in your own life?
I still want to, I'm taking steps toward it, but I just want to make sure that I'm waking up every day living as creatively as possible and trying to explore truth in the process.
As we wrap up, we always love to have our guests leave us with a final thought. What's your final thought for us today?
This is a tremendous event. You are a fantastic host, and this has been a delightful conversation.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on. We appreciate it, and we wish you the best in everything you are creating.
Thank you, sir.
Once again, we want to thank today's guest, Zach Slingsby, for taking time out and sharing his story. You can check them out at humanfactormedia.co. We also want to thank our friends over at Podcast Row and Stand Up New York for hosting today's conversation. We love what they're doing, and I hope that you get involved with what they're doing too. You can check them out at podcast-row.com. Today's show was sponsored by our friends over at Penji. They're offering you 15% off your first month. All you have to do is head on over to penji.co, use the code JUMBLE. Did you enjoy today's show? Do you love JumbleThink? Would you take a moment and share today's episode or your favorite episode with that friend, coworker, family member that's a big dreamer? And thank you for tuning into today's show. It means the world to us that you would listen to what we're creating. And I hope it's encouraged you on your journey of chasing big ideas and dreams. Now it's your turn. You have to make a choice. Are you going to take the steps to make your dreams and ideas a reality? We believe you were created for it, that you have amazing things to create. So get out there, dream big, and change the world around you. Étirez-vous doucement, mais complètement. En avant, en arrière, sur les côtés. Vous êtes une autre personne. Les mères de famille, les enfants peuvent également prendre un moment revitalisant. Dans quelques mois, lorsque vous aurez bien saisi la technique et que vous serez maître de votre corps, vous pourrez vous décontracter même en travaillant.